Welcome to Hockey Prospectus Radio. Matthew Collar along with Timo Seppa. Timo, how are you?
Hey, Matt, doing good. Glad hockey's back. Hooray. We thought it would be back, but I don't think anybody was really sure it would be back.
Well, I got to say, you called it. I mean, the whole time along, I brought you on the radio with me in Buffalo, and we were on here with a podcast, and you stayed steadfast that it would always go down to the very last minute, and then they would get it worked out, and then we'd have a short camp, and then we'd have a 48-game season, and you were dead on. That's what we got. So we have a solid show for you tonight. We're bringing on one of our big guns, Tom Awad, who's going to come on, and we're going to preview the Eastern Conference with him and talk about a lot of different things about the Vakota projections that he's come up with, and a brilliant hockey stat guy that we love to have on, Tom Awad. He'll be on in just a few minutes. We also got to promote some things. I mean, we're hoping to get ourselves officially on iTunes soon, something that we should have done last year, but we're working on it. So we should have this on iTunes, which is great. And also, Timo, the book.
There's a book?
I've heard there's a book. In fact, yeah. I remember way back in the summertime working on a book, but I guess one came out.
Yeah, I remember working on one in the summer and in the fall.
So yes.
It might have taken a little bit bigger chunk of my life, but it's definitely our third book, our latest and greatest Hockey Prospectus 2012-2013 is out there. You can get it from Amazon.com. You can also get the digital download just by going to the HockeyProspectus.com website. If you need it tonight for your fantasy draft, go ahead and download the PDF. Also, if you're looking for just the Excel spreadsheet for the Vakota projections, you can also find that as a product on the HockeyProspectus.com website. That's been updated by Tom to include projections for the 48-game schedule, so you can find that there as well. If you've already purchased that, you can go and get the update for free.
Awesomeness. And you know what, Timo, that in my opinion, it's the best book yet because I had a larger role in it than I did last year. So it's got to be the best, especially some certain Northeast teams that I may or may not have been responsible for.
Right. You did Buffalo and Boston and Washington, was it?
That's correct. Yes, Washington too. Buffalo and Boston, you know, the two, I guess, well, I'm trying to decide if they're rivals or just Boston beats up Buffalo and has too much fun with it. But
I guess they're not enough rivals for the NHL to put them head-to-head on opening night, but they are rivals. So
no, I guess not. The Sabres, they get to open one day later. So, but we got to get Tom Awad on here, and we're going to talk about everything Eastern Conference and everything stats and all sorts of stuff and a little bit about Tom's book contributions. But we mentioned it a lot in the last podcast. My favorite part of the book was something I was not responsible for, the player usage charts by Rob Volman. Other than, you know, Tom's great projections for players, it's a new thing, and it's really cool. So you should check it out. But we're going to take a break. Timo and I will be back. We will have one of the guys that we really love having on, Tom Awad, in a minute here on Hockey Prospectus Radio. Welcome back to Hockey Prospectus Radio. Matthew Collar, Timo Seppa, and now we bring in one of our favorite guys. If this is the first time listening to the podcast, then shame on you, but that means you haven't heard him before. But he is one of our favorite guys to have on. The inventor of Vakota, the inventor of GVT. It's Tom Awad. Tom, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on, Matt.
Well, Tom, since it's the beginning of the season again, you know, we like to have you on throughout the year, but since it's the beginning of the year, we should probably kind of reset what it is that, you know, we do at Hockey Prospectus and what's in our book and what we write about. And a major part of our projections is, if not all of our projections, coming directly from statistics that you came up with, goals versus threshold, and Vokoda, and we're going to talk a lot about them in terms of players and teams. So can you give us the short version of what GVT is and what Vokoda is?
Absolutely. So GVT, first of all, is a metric that's it's very similar to something like WAR in baseball. It's a metric that's designed to encapsulate a player's total value into a single number. One of the problems we have with hockey statistics is that there's a lot of different statistics, and people, you know, intelligent people disagree on how much each of them are worth. Some are more valuable than others. Others are completely worthless or almost, yet people, an example is goaltender wins, yet people still assign value to them. So GVT is an attempt to encapsulate a player's value into a single number. So GVT's unit is goals. It's called goals versus threshold. And what it represents is the value that a player contributes above what we call a replacement level, which is the players that are easily accessible, either, you know, top of the line AHLers or bottom, you know, fourth line players in the NHL. So that's what GVT, one other benefit of GVT is it allows us to easily compare players across positions. Traditionally in hockey, it's extremely difficult to do that. The expectations, you know, offensive expectations and defensive expectations between forwards and defensemen are different. Different players get different ice times, so you've got to factor that in. And of course, goaltenders are on a completely other, different axis, which people find impossible to compare. So GVT allows you to compare all of these players in a single number.
And how about how about the Vokoda, you know, for the team projections? I mean, you know, one of the things that we do in the book is pretty much project where every team is going to end up this year. And, you know, looking over your projections, Tom, you're going to make some fans, if there are any, in Florida and Phoenix a little bit angry after those two teams made the playoffs because they're toward the bottom of the league.
That's correct. So one of the big benefits of GVT is that it links player performance to team performance. The sum of the GVT of all the players on the team is that team's goal differential, which tends to be very close to how good that team really is. And Vokoda is a projection system that's derived from GVT that basically allows us to project for each player what their GVT next year is going to be. Now, if you know what every player's GVT is going to be next year, you can estimate what each team's goal differential is going to be, and consequently, if you know their goal differential, you know what their record is going to be. Obviously, like any projection system, it's not perfect, but it's historically, if you look at our track record, it's pretty close. And yes, I'm aware of the fact that some fans are not going to be very happy with me, although we'll see in June who has the last laugh.
Oh, look at that, Tom.
Hey, Tom. Before we go into the specifics of, you know, where certain players and teams are, one thing that people notice, and I've seen even criticize about the Vokoda projections, especially as far as teams, is that the teams end up in pretty narrow bands. I mean, if you're going back to our full season projections, you had Pittsburgh as the number one team with 104 points, and Columbus was down in the low 80s with 81 or something like that. So, I mean, you only have a 20 or so point spread between the best and the worst teams that Vokoda is projecting. What do you say to people, you know, that say that band is too tight there?
I think that that's actually pretty close to what is the true talent spread in the NHL these days. People underestimate how much the NHL standings get spread out just due to luck and to bounces season over season. I mean, we tend to see a lot of teams, if you look over the last, you know, 3-4 years, a lot of teams bouncing up and down in the standings. I mean, take a team like, and St. Louis maybe is a good example. They jumped up 22 points last season, despite the fact that they didn't significantly overhaul their roster. I mean, granted, they got a lot of their young players got a year older, but things like that don't just, you know, happen overnight. Some of it, I mean, granted, there was a coaching change, but the fact is that people talk about parity in the NHL, and parity is a reality in the NHL. So there will be a team this year that'll, you know, well, it won't be 110 points because we're on to a 48 game season, but there'll be a team that'll get, you know, sit between 60 and 65 points for sure. Even though my current projection, the highest over 48 games, gives Pittsburgh at, I think, 59 points. There will be a team that will get more than that, but some of it will be luck. Some of it will be the team that doesn't get any of their players injured, for example. You know, there's a big difference between an elite team that keeps their number one center for the entire season and an elite team that loses their number one center, you know, on game five. Other teams will just get, you know, a poor shootout and overtime record. A good example of this last year is Montreal. Montreal finished last in the Eastern Conference. I personally very much doubt, and I live in Montreal, I'm not more biased towards Montreal than anybody else, but they were clearly not the worst team in the Eastern Conference, as you can see by their goal differential. But they had, a 7-16 record in overtime and shootouts. Most of that is due to luck. So the fact is, while the end season standings will be more spread out than the projections are probably a more accurate reflection of what is the talent spread in the NHL.
I think one other factor that people maybe don't think about, I mean, especially over the long season, is once you get to the trading deadline, I mean, it's the good teams that are buying and the bad teams that are selling. So, I mean, if everybody kept the players that they had, the standings would end up a little bit more bunched up. And the fact that you were, taking talent from the teams that are at the bottom of the standings and giving it to teams that are at the top of the standings, that's going to, you know, spread out the standings a little bit more just because of that as well.
That's very true. That's going to get spread out. Also, the teams that got unlucky over the first, well, this year it won't be 50 games. The teams that have gotten unlucky over the first 30 games that seem like they'll be missing the playoffs are the ones who are going to be packing it in, as you said, making it look even worse. Many of these teams will try out younger players near the end of the season because they don't have that much to lose. Exactly. There are some, the trading deadline certainly factors into accentuating that the spread that's already there.
Tom, I did a little bit of math and research on the first 48 games of last season, the last 48 games, and the conference records in 48 games. And I came up with 48-game season not really having a huge effect on who would make the playoffs kind of at the end of the day. But, I mean, what's your take on a shortened season? I mean, how did it affect the projections for you in adjusting them? And, you know, what do you think about a 48-game season? Do you think it's going to have a lot of effect on how things shake out as opposed to who's actually the teams that should be at the top at the end?
I think it'll certainly add more randomness than there would have been otherwise. In my case, because my predictions are based on an estimate of the true talent level of the teams, the estimates don't change due to the 48-game season. They're obviously reduced, but the estimates are basically perfectly scaled down versions from 82 to 48 games. But in terms of what I think is going to happen in practice, I think we'll see more, even more randomness. I'm less confident about the predictions this season that I would have been over a full 82 games. Injuries will have a much greater effect. Bounces will have a much greater effect. And a good example of this is the last time we had a 48 game season. It was the only time, ironically, other than this year, that we had a Stanley Cup champion who didn't finish in the top four seeds of the conference. The New Jersey Devils in 1995 finished fifth or sixth in the East, yet managed to win the Stanley Cup. And that basically in the eight, in the, ever since we've done the conference seeding 1-8, the Devils of 95 and the Kings of this year are the only two teams that came out of the bottom four seeds. So that shows that the regular season standings are maybe not as representative of the true talent level over 48 games as they would be over 82.
Right. I guess I want to throw a really bad cliche at you and go, hey, Tom, just get in, buddy. Just get into the playoffs. But anyway, you end up hearing that a lot. But, Tom, how about players? I mean, it can clearly have an effect on a guy's season. And watching Buffalo as much as I do, I'll give you an example. If you took Drew Stafford's first 48 games last year, you would have thought he was replacement level, that maybe he should even be AHL. He was so bad. in the first half of the season. And then the second half he came on, had a typical hot streak, because that's the type of player he is, hot and cold, and ended up having a decent season, scoring 50 points. I mean, how much can this affect individual seasons and even maybe, you know, contracts going forward?
It will, a lot. Again, the best historical example that we have is the 95 season. And when you look in the 95 season, you had all kinds of statistical anomalies that occurred that year. You had a good example that comes to mind is Peter Bondra, who had managed 30 goals and I think 9 assists over that 48-game season. You had Paul Coffey, who at the age of maybe 36 or 37 finished in the top 5 or 6 of league scoring. So you had a lot of bizarre phenomena. If you look at, say, like go back and look at the top 10 scorers of 95, and you'll notice that it didn't match the season before or the season after. Obviously, there's a few names like Joe Sakic, I think, who were there regardless because they're just that good, you know. So obviously, there's guys that, I mean, assuming that they're healthy, you know, you can expect to see a Crosby or a Stamkos in the top 10 scorers, but you'll see a few surprises as well. I mean, Drew Stafford is a good example, but, you know, more normal guys, you know, a good example, you know, a Phil Kessel or a Tyler Seguin, a guy who could very easily either fall into the top, you know, 5 or 10 scorers this year, or could drop out if they just get a slow start for whatever reason.
Hey, Tom, let's talk about some surprises in your team projections. We kind of hinted at them, but why don't you just say, what do you think it is about teams that made it far in the playoffs, like New Jersey and Phoenix? You know, Vakota has them in the bottom handful of teams. What do you think it is about teams like that that make you think that they might not make the playoffs?
Okay. Well, in New Jersey's case, I think it's relatively straightforward. They lost their best player. I mean, Ilya Kovalchuk has been coming into his own in New Jersey. I would say it's fair to say that Parise was New Jersey's best overall player last year and over the past couple of seasons, and he's gone. And one of their other top three forwards of the last year is Patrick Eliash. And I'm not sure exactly how old he is, but he's pushing age. He's got to be in the 30s, 36, 37 by now.
Right. And obviously Brodeur, it has, you know, other than a good second half of last season, he had a pretty brutal season and a half before that. So, I mean, Brodeur's got to be part of the equation there as well.
Exactly. I mean, I'm not sure I mean, Vakota's not projecting a terrible year for Brodeur, but he's clearly not the elite goaltender that he's been at, you know, at previous points in his career. So, I mean, honestly, other than the fact that New Jersey actually, you know, made it to the Stanley Cup Finals last year, if you were just to look at their lineup, you know, starting with a, you know, blank sheet of paper and just looking at their lineup for next year, you would not see them as one of the elite teams in the Eastern Conference. Now, they could, I mean, they could still surprise us. They could still make the playoffs. Like, as you said, the spread is not so wide that it's unrealistic that, you know, New Jersey would not finish ahead of teams like, you know, Carolina or Toronto. But I wouldn't consider them by any means a lock to make the playoffs. When it comes to Phoenix, sorry?
Go ahead. I was going to ask you about Phoenix. I mean, do you think a team like Phoenix, because I think that that's a team that's outperformed Vakota for several years. I mean, do you buy into the fact that, you know, good coaching, you know, Dave Tippett, for instance, has some kind of influence on making them consistently perform better? I mean, obviously they had a huge year out of Mike Smith last year. You know, so you could expect that to regress. But other than that, I mean, you look at Phoenix and they keep kind of overperforming.
In all fairness, they have outperformed Vakota for 2 or 3 years now. So obviously, you know, maybe they do have some, how should I put it, magical recipe that, you know, makes it such that their statistics don't move exactly in the same way as other teams. But a lot of their monster season last year was due to Mike Smith, and seasons like that don't necessarily tend to carry over. to the next year. I mean, we've seen similar things from Tim Thomas, you know, 2 or 3 years ago. We've seen similar things. I mean, if you go back further back from players like José Theodore or Jean-Sébastien Giguère, which have tended not to persist. The other thing is that Phoenix, you know, they still got outshot by almost, you know, 200 shots last season. So clearly this is not a team that tends to dominate play. Obviously the record was still successful. You know, if they've gotten solid goaltending now for a couple of years from different players. They got good goaltending from Ilya Brizgalov 2 or 3 years ago when he was there as well. So maybe they have a good recipe either for, you know, making their goaltenders look good or, you know, just, you know, tuning their goaltenders up correctly. But I would think the safer bet is, you know, they were on a hot streak last year and probably some of that will regress this season.
Tom, I mean, how much do you think coaching can affect a team? I mean, it kind of sounds to me like you're not really buying into the Tippett magic here. I mean, Ilya Brizgalov to me showed last year that he's not a super goaltender. He's not a Vezina caliber elite goalie, and Mike Smith was nobody before. I mean, can it be that just the goaltenders tend to have their really good year, like that just happened to happen under Tippett? Or, I mean, is he affecting that? Is he creating a system that, you know, allows very few good shots? I know that we don't believe necessarily in, you know, quality chances and all that, but I think you can limit the amount of people who get closer to your net with your system. I mean, how much do you think that a coach, like maybe in terms of just goals, wins, whatever, can you put a value on how much a coach affects a team and different players?
It's hard to say. I'm not saying I don't believe in it. I mean, we've seen in a lot of cases, we've seen, you know, good coaches move into teams. You know, we've seen, you know, Tippett, you know, get more out of his players than seems possible. We've seen a guy like Ken Hitchcock, for example, you know, get more out of his team than previous coaches were getting. So it's clearly possible. Obviously, Phoenix's record over the last 2 years has been good enough that I'm willing to grant that it seems like they're doing something right. You know, how to quantify that is difficult. I mean, I'll agree with you. I mean, Mike Smith, as you said, was a nobody until he moved into Phoenix, and now he's looking like, you know, like Jacques Plante. is it Phoenix? Is it him? You know, it's hard to say. Is it a bit of both? Is it the defensive players that somehow just seem to know what they're doing?
Guys,
I don't know.
I want to get on to the I know our listeners want to hear our team and our division projections. I want to get on to that in just a second. I have one more question on just the overall projections, and I've got two teams that come to mind that I think are going to interest people based on the moves that they made in the offseason. One is obviously Minnesota, having picked up Ryan Suter and Zach Parise. I mean, really, they didn't move up that much up the charts, up the Vokoda charts, but, you know, arguably a bubble playoff team. And the other interesting team is Carolina, who picked up Jordan Staal in a trade and Alexander Semin. So, you know, Vokoda thinks that they are a playoff team. So you have a quick word on those two teams, Tom?
Yeah, to be honest, I was expecting Minnesota to look a little better than they did. I think part of the problem is that people didn't grasp quite how bad they were last year. You know, Minnesota finished 12th in the West, and arguably they could have, you know, easily finished even 14th. I think there's only Columbus that was clearly worse than them in the West. I mean, if they hadn't had that hot streak over the first 25 games of the season, there's a good odds that they would have been, you know, dead last in the Western Conference last year. So I think they made a good move. I think Vokoda is actually has trouble valuing Ryan Suter probably at his full value, because I think his Vokoda projection is only something like, you know, 11 GBT, which is pretty good for a defenseman, but it's still, you know, I think it's fair to say that Suter's probably worth more than that, you know, versus whoever the alternative would have been. But I don't think Minnesota is going to be a contender in the West. I think they'll probably be fighting for a playoff spot, but I don't think they're one of the elite teams in the West. As for Carolina, I think Bakota's estimate is pretty fair on. I mean, Carolina was, you know, out of the playoffs last year. They were bad, but they were not terrible. And I think they did just enough to, you know, to move back into contention.
Well, let's talk a lot more about the Northeast teams specifically with you, Tom. We'll take a break first, and then we'll let you catch your breath, Tom. You're on fire. Someone put you out, huh? Nobody? Okay.
Thanks a lot, Matt.
Well, let's take a break, and we'll come back, and we'll talk about all the Northeast teams with Tom Awad here, the inventor of GVT and Vakota, and of general awesomeness. We'll be right back with Tom Awad here on Hockey Perspectives Radio. Back here on Hockey Perspectives Radio, Matthew Collar and Timo Seppa, and joining us is one of our favorite guys in the world, Tom Awad, the inventor of GVT and Vakota projections, and we're going to run down the entire Eastern Conference in this podcast, but we want Tom with us here for the Northeast especially. And Tom, I'm going to go from bottom to top and where they finished last year, and I just want you to tell me what the Vakota projection says about a team, basically, and kind of your take. And, I mean, let's just start with Montreal. You mentioned in the last segment that, you know, they had 16 overtime or shootout losses last year. I mean, that's a ton. So a little bit of bad luck there and a little bit stupid scoring system still in the NHL, which I noticed isn't going to change. So let's start there. What do you think of Montreal, Tom?
Yeah, I mean, Montreal was not nearly as bad last year as their record indicated. They were nowhere near an elite team. But, I mean, they only got outscored by 14 goals. In fact, they only got outscored by 6 goals with even strength. So they were, you know, close to being a league average team. Now, unfortunately, they didn't really improve in the offseason, so I don't think they'll be, you know, much better than that. But even if we were to rerun last year's season, they'd do a lot better than the 78 points. Vakota sees them at 86, and I think that's reasonable.
Tom, what just your take on just being local there in Montreal? You getting a good vibe on Marc Bergevin yet as GM? Do you think that he'll turn that team in a more positive direction?
I think people here are willing to give him the benefit of the doubt. The team in Montreal has been, you know, mediocre for several years, and I think people in Montreal are only starting to accept it's not their God-given right to have an excellent team every season. But it doesn't really matter. People here, I mean, it's like Toronto. People will be insanely passionate about the team no matter how poorly they do. That's one of the reasons why markets like this, in fact, are maybe destined to not have excellent teams.
Of course, the line between passionate, delusional, and crazy is pretty gray. But, all right.
Here it's overlapped.
Yes, right, exactly. And, well, somewhat in here in Buffalo, too, Tom. Toronto. I think, you know, Toronto, they still haven't solved the goaltending problem. And I think that's going to have kind of a big impact in whether they actually acquire Roberto Luongo or not. Tom, I mean, what do you think about Toronto?
I completely agree. I mean, Vakota, the only goaltender that Vakota right now has in Toronto's lineup next year is James Reimer, and he's only projected for 30 games or so. So the rest of the goaltending will have to come from somebody. I agree that, you know, I think Roberto Luongo would actually make sense for Toronto given where they are, because the rest of their team, much as I've mocked Toronto in the past, and I think with fair reason, the rest of their team is actually quite decent by now. You know, their young players have grown up, and Brian Burke, you know, for all he's been, you know, and fairly so maligned for the Phil Kessel trade, put in place a fairly good base. But they've never managed to get anywhere close to being decent in goaltending. Vakota gives them the benefit of the doubt, assumes they'll get some kind of close to average goaltender, and if they do, they'll actually be a playoff team.
One of Vakota's big hits last year, I think we even talked about it on our kickoff podcast, was Phil Kessel. So Vakota was ahead of the curve on Phil Kessel and projecting a big season for him.
So moving just kind of from bottom to top here in the Northeast Division with Tom Awad and Timo Seppä. Buffalo, Tom, I mean, they signed Jochen Hesch today, so that clearly means that they're a contender for the Cup. But they have some wild cards, too, and Mikhail Gregorenko, their first-round pick, and whether you know he's going to make the team and whether Ryan Miller stays healthy all year this year. Last year, missed a bunch of games with a concussion, and I think that had a pretty big impact on his on the team. Your thoughts on Buffalo?
Yeah, I mean, Buffalo was maybe the biggest disappointment in the NHL last year. I mean, they really, you know, they splashed out, you know, the summer before. They signed Kristen Erhoff. They signed, you know, Viley Leino. You know, and it never really worked out for them last year. Like you said, you know, Ryan Miller, you know, he had issues. He was not, you know, not the elite goaltender that they were hoping for. Kind of struggled all year. Vokoda sees them a bit better this season. I think we've got them, you know, near the middle of the pack of the Eastern Conference. But unless there's some tangible reason to believe that they'll be significantly better than last year, there's no reason to believe there'll be anything more than a 7 or 8 seed.
Matt, how about your take? I mean, obviously we need your take. You're right there in Buffalo. I imagine that you're bullish on their talent and think that they're, you know, a solid, although maybe lower tier playoff team in the East?
I agree with where Tom has them. I see them as a 6, 7, 8 type team, but I really am kind of stuck on this Mikhail Gregorenko thing. I mean, we talked to Corey Pronman, who really loves Gregorenko. He's our prospect guy. And if he brings to the table what some 18 or 19 year olds have brought to the table the last couple of years for their team, then I think that changes things. I think that, I mean, he's a number one center type talent, and if he can even bring somewhat of that to the table as an 18 year old, I think that makes a big change. But right now, no, I don't think that they're an elite team in the East. I mean, I just think that the overall talent of the roster went down when you got rid of Derek Roy. And even though people in Buffalo really don't like him, and you know, bringing in Steve Ott and John Scott for toughness is nice, but it's not. I mean, it's not gonna. I don't think it's gonna affect you in terms of winning games. You know, even if you can have someone to fight Milan Lucic when he runs over your goaltender. So I still think too, Cody Hodson, I'm not sold on. And right now, today, they were skating him as their number two center. And I don't know how I feel about that. So, no, I agree with Tom's projection.
Yeah, that has about the same chance of working as skating Ville Leino as the number two center. I mean, that's, two kind of offensive-oriented, kind of softer players. So, sounds like the, you know, different year, same mistake.
Ottawa, Tom, what do you got on Ottawa? They had a positive differential last year. They were in the playoffs, and I think that it surprised me a little bit because I didn't think that they were going to be up there. How about Ottawa?
It surprised the heck out of me. I mean, a lot of people had Ottawa in the bottom three in the conference, and I think justifiably so. Ottawa basically got three big surprises last year. Three players were significantly overperformed. Jason Spezza was suddenly resurrected. You know, and I think finished fourth in NHL scoring or something insane like that. Erik Karlsson, who we obviously, you know about, who was, you know, by far the most impressive offensive defenseman in the NHL. And Craig Anderson, who turned around their goaltending situation entirely. So, I mean, those were the reasons, because Ottawa, frankly, at the beginning of last year, was not projected anywhere near the playoffs. Now, the thing is, I don't think there's a lot of upside left versus those performances. If they get as good seasons out of Spezza, Karlsson, and Anderson, I think they'll have fireworks in Ottawa. So I think last season's performance is a ceiling almost for that team. So I see them in, you know, a little worse than last season, probably, you know, barely out of the playoffs.
Yeah, and the other one that you didn't mention, Tom, was Milan Mikhalek. I mean, he did. You know, he was a big player in, several seasons ago. Last two seasons before that, he was only in the low 30s in points, and then he jumped back up to 60 points. So, I mean, they had a ton of guys who performed just about as well as you possibly could imagine offensively. I mean, Carlson's a different thing because he's a young player. You don't know what he's going to become. But these guys who, you know, were mid-career veterans and all of a sudden their points jumped up, I just don't see that happening. And I don't think their defense overall is very good.
No, I completely agree with you.
Yeah, their defense, I think, is really, really bad. But I do like Craig Anderson. You know, I think he's pretty solid considering what he has to face with, as brutal as their D can be. Tom, yeah. One more
team. And he's been solid in several places by now, so I think he's proven himself.
Yeah, I agree. The last team, to me, was the best team in the NHL last year. They got thrown for a loop by one of the weirdest developments ever, that Tim Thomas is a nutbag. And it kind of threw them off their game, but they got it back together and lost in a 7-game series, which I guess, you know, is one of those things that can just happen. It was a great series, and, you know, they ended up getting knocked out. It's happened before. It happened to them. But, you know, for my money with Boston, they're losing Tim Thomas here, but they're not losing much else. They should be one of the best teams in the NHL again.
I completely agree. In fact, Vakota has them number 2 in the NHL, only 1 point behind Pittsburgh. So I think we all agree. Look, Boston's, you know, forward lines are probably, you know, as good as anybody. If you look at the two-way players they've got, both the forward and the defense, with players like Bergeron, with players like Zdeno Chara, you know, Tyler Seguin, who's, you know, clearly developing into an excellent player as well. So they have a heck of a lineup. And Tuukka Rask, you know, while he doesn't have Thomas's track record at this point, you know, has been, you know, a very good goaltender in his NHL career, and I don't think they're at all worried about having him in there. So, yes, I think Boston will win the Northeast. Even over a shortened 48-game season, I think Boston is a pretty safe bet to win the Northeast, if only because there's nobody in their division who's close to being as good as them.
Yeah, I mean, they get hurt if Rask has some kind of injury issue, and he's had little dings the last few seasons. He's not a young goalie anymore, so it's not like he's a guy in his early 20s who you'd really worry about leaning really hard on as a number one. You still wonder with the compressed schedule. To me, Rask is the biggest question mark, whether it's injuries or fatigue or that's something that you really don't have that much of a track record for recently is how players, maybe especially goalies, are going to do under a compressed schedule.
It's a fair concern, but while it's fair to have a concern about Rask, I think there's a lot of other NHL teams that have a similar issue.
Sure.
Because there's a lot of teams that lean pretty heavily on their number one goaltender in this league.
Tom, I pitched the idea, and mostly just because it would be awesome, but maybe not because it's the smartest thing, of Boston getting Dominic Hasek as a backup goalie. Tell me that that's awesome. Come on, Tom. Tell me that that's awesome.
That is certainly awesome. I would pay to go watch that game.
I mean, it's a 48-game season. If they played him five times or seven times, it'd be awesome. It would just be so cool. Yeah, I would pay whatever they wanted on StubHub, and I would drive the 9 hours to Boston to watch it. It'd be great.
Yep. And he may well still be better than whoever Toronto will play in Nets this season.
Tom, I think that we should end this with you taking a jab at Toronto, because there's no more appropriate way to finish it.
I agree. Thank you very much for having me on, Matt.
Thank you so much, Tom. We always appreciate your insight.
Okay. Bye.
Thank you, Tom.
Tom Awad here on Hockey Prospectus Radio, taking a one last parting shot at Toronto, as always. Timo and I are going to come back, and we'll run through the rest of the Eastern Conference when we come back here on Hockey Prospectus Radio. Back here on Hockey Prospectus Radio, and we very much appreciate Tom Awad stopping in. Always great to have him and his insights, and of course, we're using his projection, so it makes sense to get the guy who invented the thing on here and to, you know, have his say. And of course, we always appreciate that. So, Timo and I now are going to get through the other divisions here and what our projections look like, because You know, last year we put so much effort into each team that we were halfway through the season by the time we got through the team. So we've changed it up a little bit to make more sense, if you will. Totally Timo's idea. So with the Atlantic Division, I know, Timo, you wrote a lot about this, you know, in the book about this particular division, and you see the Islanders fairly often. They were really terrible last year, the Islanders were. And I have a tough time thinking that signing Brad Boyes is going to make them not terrible.
Yeah, I mean, the Islanders are a weird team in that they've had stretches where they've been, you know, competitive enough to make the playoffs. It's just that they can't sustain that for 82 games. But, you know, if there's teams that 48 games are going to help, it's going to be teams like the Islanders or Minnesota or whatever, where Toronto, whatever, where they can let them catch fire for 40 games and then let the slump only be 8 games, whatever it is. So I think the Islanders have a shot to sneak into the playoffs. The big thing with their lineup is they have a very top-heavy lineup. Last year, if you look at their top 6 forwards, top 3 defensemen, they've got a lot of quality there with John Tavares and Matt Molson, Michael Grabner, Opozo, Franz Nielsen, Mark Streit, Travis Hamonic, Andrew McDonald. They've got good quality. It's just the bottom half of their roster was awful last year. Just awful. And the question is, have they improved that this year? And I guess we kind of have to see who comes out of training camp because, you know, early word is, you know, some of the better defensemen, young defensemen that they had in Bridgeport, maybe they don't even come up with the Islanders in the beginning of the season. And they've got puzzling choices in there, like trying to resurrect Radek Martinik. And choices like that where, you know, you just bringing in Matt Karkner, you know, you just kind of wish that they would give youngsters like Matt Donovan a try. You certainly wish they're going to give Ryan Strome a try. So it's a question of whether the bottom half of the roster is something better than awful for them.
And the goaltending situation is still a disaster?
I mean, Nabokov is all right. I mean, if you... you know, it's ironic for the Islanders for the last couple of years. I mean, people joke around about DiPietro being hurt all the time. Well, because he's a well below average goaltender when he plays, it's actually kind of beneficial that he's injured, you know, ironically.
You never want to really say that, but that's unfortunate. All right, New Jersey. I mean...
Oh, by the way, let's just throw out and just say what the Vokoda projections are.
Oh,
I mean,
right, yeah, go ahead.
Vokoda projections for the Islanders, we had them at 88 points for the full season and 52 for the 48-game season. And we're not projecting them in last place for this season in the Atlantic Division.
You are not projecting them in last place. So that would mean, that has to mean, that New Jersey is projected. Now, last year, 102 points and a Stanley Cup appearance. But as we mentioned last segment with Tom Awad, they lost just kind of a big name in Zach Parise, who's really one of the best players in the NHL.
Right, and we've got New Jersey at 86 points over the 82-game schedule and 50 points over the 48-game schedule. You know, we covered them last segment. Certainly, Brodeur pulled it together for half of the season in the playoffs, but he has not been good over the last couple seasons. And I think people underestimate Zach Parise. I mean, some people think that it was an outlandish contract he got from Minnesota. I think he is a really good player. I mean, you go back before his knee injury, he was a monster two-way player. I mean, you look at GVT, you look at the shot-based metrics. I mean, he was an awesome player. And I wouldn't be surprised if you give him now one full year that he had last year, that if he doesn't bounce back to closer to what he was prior to that injury. So I think he'll be a really good player for Minnesota. And, you know, then you got players like Ilya Kovalchuk, who had, you know, he had a poor season 2 years ago. Last season, his production went through the roof, and among other things, I think he put up 5 GVT just in the shootout, and he'd been an awful shootout performer in his career before that. So, you know, some performances that you expect to come down to earth like that.
I mean, losing Parise and Brodeur, those are the 2 points. I mean, I don't know about the Kovalchuk shootout thing. I mean, that's just weird. Like, why for 1 year, like, would he be so valuable, so good in the shootout when he, for his career, hadn't been? Oh, maybe because it's a coin flip, I guess. I don't know, but I think Kovalchuk, I mean, I would guess he's still great, but losing Parise, he's like a poster child for goals and assists aren't everything when you're comparing players, because, yeah. I mean, he is constantly playing against the best players in the league and performing extremely well against them, and I think that'll show up in Brodeur's numbers, too, that he does not have his toughest to play against two-way forward. So, moving from bottom to top in the Atlantic Division for where they finished last season, the Philadelphia Flyers, who, you know, I think if Ilya Brizgalov is even an average goalie last year, I mean, not only, like, should they probably have been right there for the cup, but, I mean, they should have been one of the best teams in the NHL if they had just gotten decent goaltending and defense. You got to put it on their defense, too. It's almost like it got overlooked, them losing Pronger last year. Like, it just, maybe because it was so early in the season, but it didn't get talked about enough that Pronger was still one of the best defensemen in the league when he went out with the concussion issue, and I think that showed up, and of course, Brizgalov being just aloof. Like, that I think was a huge problem, too, and maybe, I don't know, maybe being on TV threw him off, but he was terrible last season. So, Timo, where do we got Philadelphia?
We had them at 97 points over the full season and 57 over the 48 games, so we've definitely got them as one of the solid playoff teams in the Eastern Conference. And, you know, I agree with most of what you said there. I mean, Chris Pronger, you know, it certainly could be a career for him at this point, and that's a shame. I mean, if he could somehow come back, I think that would be a huge addition for Philadelphia. I mean, the big story for them last year, right, is they traded off both Jeff Carter and Mike Richards, and you figured that they would have taken a step back. And the players they brought in, the young players, I mean, credit to Paul Holmgren here. I mean, you know, they reloaded right away with players like Jacob Voracek, and they didn't miss a beat, you know, bringing in rookies like Sean Couturier. So they reloaded right away, and they're still a really solid team.
Man, Holmgren, you know, he would have looked like a complete genius if at least Brizgalov had even been decent. But giving Brizgalov that kind of money when he was playing with Dave Tippett, who, you know, Tom Awad might not agree entirely with me, but I think coach, system, goaltender, when it comes to performance and statistics, they're all tied in together in a big knot. And I don't think that, you know, you can ever pick up a goalie who played for Ken Hitchcock or who played for Dave Tippett and trust what you're going to get as results when you pick him up. And then paying him for that long, that big of a contract, was silly. But everything else that Holmgren did, it looked genius, really, when it was highly questioned and criticized, yep, getting rid of Carter and Richards. And then even more so after the Kings won the Cup, I would say unfairly so.
Yeah, and really, and ironically, obviously, I mean, the Brizgalov pickup, you know, whether that was Holmgren or driven by Ed Schneider or whoever, I mean, they'll be able to take that off the books if they choose to next offseason. So they'll be able to erase that big mistake they never should have made.
Yeah, one of the cool things about the new CBA, you know, being able to buy out a couple of players. Moving up the board, the best team in the league, in my opinion, this year, going into the season, Pittsburgh, I'm writing them in. They should be either the Stanley Cup champion or they should be in the Stanley Cup this year. I know anything can happen in the playoffs, but if Pittsburgh has Sidney Crosby back for 48 games, they're the best team in the league, and they picked up a goalie who's actually a capable goaltender in Thomas Vokoun, who is, again, crazy over or crazy underrated and way better than anyone ever gives him credit for. And he's going to be a backup goaltender, maybe. My guess is that might not last long, as bad as Fleury is and as good as Vokoun is. But I know, I didn't want to get into backup goaltenders here, but I think that that addition is a really smart one for the Penguins.
This isn't backup goaltenders. I mean, this is a competition between two guys, and I certainly wouldn't be expected, be surprised to see Vokoun carrying the mail in the playoffs, because Fleury's been flat-out awful the last couple of years. I mean, honestly, he was just decent the year that they won the Stanley Cup. Mm-hmm. He's been bad since. I think it's nice, actually, to have two solid goalies for the compressed schedule, like what I said before. Mm-hmm. And, 100%. I mean, Vokoun's been one of the top handful of the best goalies since the previous lockout. And I think he's a big difference maker. I mean, that team is really stacked with talent, and goalie is the one big question mark, and they fixed it. I mean, it's the one kind of stealth move over the summer that people really didn't talk about.
Yeah, and I think it could make a huge difference, because they got into that playoff series and Marc-Andre Fleury was bad and they had no options. There was nothing they could do. Brent Johnson, even having him on an NHL team was a joke. I can name 10 AHL goalies who are better than Brent Johnson, and maybe some of them by quite a bit. And Brent Johnson goes in as your backup goaltender. Fleury, who you've mentioned, has never been that great, all of a sudden has some problems, and you lose a series that there's no way that you should have lost. So, but Timo, you agree. The projection agrees. I think you mentioned it last segment, Pittsburgh's the best team in the league.
Well, yeah, that doesn't mean that they're going to win the Stanley Cup, though. I mean, even dominant teams, I mean, they're going to win the Stanley Cup, I don't know, 20% of the time, mm-hmm. Whatever the team is heading into the playoffs. Vegas had Pittsburgh as the Stanley Cup favorites heading into the playoffs, and they lost in six games to Philadelphia. So, I mean, things happen. One thing that maybe gets overlooked, short-term memory, is what's Evgeny Malkin going to be this season? Two seasons ago, 3.5 GVT. I mean, yes, it was an injury-shortened season, but I mean, that was 43 games played. I mean, even over 82 games, I mean, that's, 6 or 7 GVT. Last year, a monster 33.5 GVT for a skater. I mean, is it the bad Malkin? Is it the Superman Malkin? Or is it somewhere in between?
Well, I didn't realize that his GVT was that low 2 years ago. I mean, I remember he had a tough year, but that's an incredible jump. I'll be interested to see whether at times they've put him on a line with Sidney Crosby, which doesn't even seem like that should be legal, but, I'm going to go with the favorite though, in terms of, who I think will be the best team in the league. I can't challenge Pittsburgh at all, but the New York Rangers were the best team in the Atlantic last year, and you saw a lot of New York Rangers. They have the best goaltender in the league. No, second best projected goaltender in the league. I think people would argue because of Henrik Lundqvist's consistency over the last, 5 years compared to Jonathan Quick, who really had a very good year 2 years ago and then last year exploded. So, but they have still the Rangers, one of the best goaltenders, one of the best defenses, and, Ryan McDonough, we've talked a little bit about him on defense and how good and underrated he is. And, of course, they added a guy. What was his name? Oh, yeah, Rick Nash. What do you think here?
First of all, I think I missed it on Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh, we had him projected for 104 points, 61 over the shortened season. The Rangers, we got him at 97 points. Again, one of the, if you want to call it a lock playoff team, that's hard to say in the short season. 57 points over the shortened season. Lundqvist, obviously, I mean, he's a great goalie. I'm looking for Mark Stahl to have a bounce back season.
Right.
I liked Carl Hagelin a lot even before he came up to the Rangers. I liked him when I saw him play for Connecticut. So. I think he gets better. Obviously, add Rick Nash, who's a legitimate top six forward, top line forward, whatever. I think probably the team, the mainstream media, a lot of fans miss out on the point that how many good possession players they lost or traded away. Guys that were taking on big defensive zone assignments against tough competition. Other than Brian Boyle, all of their top defensive forwards, I mean, and two-way forwards like Brandon Dubinsky, Ruslan Fedotenko, Artem Anisimov, Brandon Prust, all of them are gone now. So you bring in Rick Nash, and the simple equation is, gee, we added a top scorer. Therefore, not only did our team get better, we're going to win the Stanley Cup now because, you know, we already made it to the conference finals. And I don't think it's that simple. I mean, I really, people, I think, it, you know, obviously they're a good team still, but don't be surprised if the Rangers don't do so well and people are like, oh, they underachieved this and that. You know, they're looking around. You know, we're telling you right now, they lost a lot of good defensive forwards. They lost a lot of good two-way forwards. It may make more of an impact than you would think.
Yeah, I think you know that I've been a big fan of Fedotenko and Anisimov. You know, I'm still getting back into hockey shape a little bit, Timo, like when it comes to who got traded and stuff. You know, like I'm going to have to, you know, it was the summer where we really went over all the stuff for the book and we're writing with the teams, and you just reminded me of all the players the Rangers lost. And honestly, I forgot that so many of their good defensive players had moved on. And I think you're right. And, you know, I think that, you know, you mentioned that I'm here in Buffalo covering the Sabres. I think that was one of their big problems last year. You know, even when you just added up the numbers, the balance wasn't there. And I think that it's still a problem in Buffalo, and I think that it still could be a problem with the Rangers. Only so many people can be offense-only type players all the time. And I think that Rick Nash in the Olympics was a very physical player and hit people for Team Canada, and for some reason everyone thought he was a great defensive player, but I really don't think that. I mean, I don't know. Do you think that he's a strong defensive player? I mean, where do you have him?
I mean, I think he's a decent puck possession player, but I mean, he's not somebody who you consider a defensive or a two-way forward, and I'm sure they'll use him you know, for high offensive zone starts. So the question is, you know, who gets pushed down into more defensive roles? You'd imagine that Ryan Callahan would. They picked up Jeff Halpern, who's a, you know, fourth line defensive faceoff guy. So, I mean, you got a couple of guys who can either get moved into those kind of roles or who they've brought in. I just think that there's more that's gone out that's come in. And I think it'll make a difference. By the way, if you got a reason for buying the book, just so we can plug the book again, you know, Hockey Prospectus 2012-2013, this is the kind of thing that you will see pop out for you graphically if you look at Rob Volman's player usage charts that we have for each team in the book. So the Rangers are a big case for that, where you want to look at the player usage charts in the book.
Definitely my favorite new thing in the book, the player usage charts. And you know, just to further pub the book, people have come up to me, people who work in the NHL, and said, oh yeah, we've seen your player usage charts, you know. So people, you know, real NHL people, front office people, are looking at these. So it just, you know, buy my book, come on. Anyway, Timo, let's take a quick break, and then we're going to come back and then talk about the Southeast. We'll go through the Southeast kind of in the same way, bottom to top, and the bottom starts with a very interesting team. So we'll take a quick break. We'll come back with the Southeast next here on Hockey Prospectus Radio. Back here on Hockey Prospectus Radio, and we went through the Atlantic Division, we went through the Northeast with Tom Awad and the Vakota projections, and kind of a little bit on each team and where we see things going in this fun, short 48-game season, which I've gotten over all of my lockout angst, and now I've moved on. And now it's just all straightforward hockey from here for at least the next 8 years.
Yes, next it's Sabres angst for you next.
Well, you know, it's an intriguing team, but we'll talk more about it throughout the season, I'm sure. The backup goalie situation, of course. So, Carolina, Timo, is the bottom of the Southeast. I don't know if you remember where they were, but Carolina was another one of those teams that had a lot of overtime shootout losses. Their differential wasn't great, but it wasn't the worst ever. And then, oh yeah, by the way, they added Jordan Staal and they added Alexander Semin, who, I don't know, for some reason or another, I always want to defend Alexander Semin. Maybe it's just the ridiculous, enigmatic Russian idea or whatever it may be. I think that he's a great puck possession player and he's a very talented offensive player, and I always want to defend him. But, you know, what do you think? Is Carolina going to take a big leap here, Timo?
Well, I mean, other than, ironically, Florida, who we had, who won the division last year, I mean, Vakota has all four of the other teams over a full season. They have them finishing between 90 and 93 points. So, you know, basically throw the names in a hat and pull them out to figure out what order they're in at the end of the season. We do have Carolina winning the Southeast, 93 points over the full season and 54 points over 48 games. I think Jordan Staal is definitely underrated in some of the things he does. He's a great puck possession player. Plays against the toughest competition and all that stuff. Really, his one negative, right, is the fact that he's kind of not a great finisher, and he really doesn't belong on a power play. And I think he will be getting that power play time in Carolina. So, you know, ironically, I think they'll probably give back a little bit of his value by using him incorrectly on the power play, but maybe they won't. And as far as Semin, you know, I actually heard that. Carolina, you know, whether you believe it or not, used some advanced stats when they were identifying whether they were going to pick up Semin or not. So at least to some level. So Semin's a funny case because he's a little bit like Vokoun, right, who we talked about in the last segment, where whatever it is about his reputation or his personality, you know, it's working against him. And he had, you know, a couple seasons here where he had a chance to have a great season and get a big contract, and he just didn't do it. So, I mean, you're not going to cry for him because he's making good money over one season. But, I mean, obviously teams didn't want to give him, you know, a Zach Parise kind of a contract. So it'll be interesting to see if he can win that big contract this season.
Yeah, and I also don't want to discount all of it just because I like his play statistically. I mean, there have been a lot of guys who are terrible teammates, or I'm not saying that he is, but, you know, there has to be a reason that guys that aren't good teammates or guys that don't put in the effort that you like. I mean, the Buffalo example is Derek Roy, that, you know, even though he'd put up points over the years, you know, teammates didn't like him and his relationship with the coach wasn't very good. And he did things on the ice that just didn't fit with what they wanted to do. So, you know, you could, I guess if Semin had the same problem in Washington, you could see why teams would be a little bit, you know, a little bit wary, even though he did put up very good numbers. But, you know, Carolina, I also think keep an eye on Cam Ward. I mean, Cam Ward has been, I think, a very good goalie over the last couple of years. You know, he won that cup and then had a bad year or two, and it was kind of like, oh, it's a fluke. But I think he's been solid over the last couple of years, and you add a really good two-way forward in Staal, and you had a really good puck possession player in Semin, and you add, you know, another year for Justin Falk, a young defenseman who's pretty solid. I mean, I think you're looking at a pretty good year here from Cam Ward, especially. It's not a great division either. It's really not. The teams that you're going to play the most in this condensed season are not the best in the Eastern Conference, by far not the best. So, moving up the Southeast, Winnipeg. It's great to have Winnipeg back in the league. It was fun last year, even just to watch the couple of games from their rink. You know, there's only 15,000 fans pack in there, but they treat it like a soccer game, you know, or like a college football game. And so, you know, it's great to have them back, but I don't know how good they are, Timo.
Yeah, I mean, that's a, certainly a fan base that you would have felt bad about during the lockout. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, they supported that team great in their first season back, and obviously were enthusiastic about the team, and then you got to deal with this long lockout. So I'm sure they'll be really happy to have hockey back in Winnipeg again. We've got the Vokoda's got them basically in reverse order of last year. Vokoda's got Winnipeg coming in second in the Southeast, 91 points over a full season and 53 over the shortened season. You know, to me, the big question with them is in goal. I mean, I like some of the things that Kevin Cheveldayoff does for the Jets. On the other hand, giving a multi-year deal to Andre Pavelec, who really hasn't proven that he's anything better than a, you know, somewhat below average NHL netminder. I mean, that's kind of puzzling to me. So, goaltending to me is one continuing weakness for them.
A couple of things on that too. I mean, yeah, the goal that's always puzzled me with Pavelec, but Evander Kane and their relationship with him, it just seems to be eroding. And I don't know exactly what happened there. It seems like all behind the scenes stuff. It sounds a lot like the Alexander Semin stuff, but it doesn't seem like it's quite right. And I'm wondering if any of that stuff kind of carries over. And also, I wonder if Winnipeg can ever be a real contender while they're in the Southeast. I mean, that team's travel is brutal, and it did show up in the home and away records. I mean, their home and away records were unbelievable, the difference. 23-13-5 at home, 14-22-5 on the road. I mean, that's a giant gap of wins, home and away. So
almost all the teams in the Southeast were like that. I mean, they were all good at home and all bad on the road. So, but, I mean, you figure that, I mean, one of the first things realignment does is ship Winnipeg somewhere else other than the Southeast. I mean, they're not Atlanta anymore, so it's kind of silly that they're there. But, yeah, I suppose it's good from the competition point of view.
I just think it makes it tough on that team, especially in a shortened season, that there's going to be a lot of travel and a lot of back-to-backs and things like that. And, you know, going from, maybe it doesn't make that big of a difference. Don't worry, Timo. The new CBA made sure that any player not on an entry-level contract gets their own hotel room. So it's a good thing that we missed 4 months of a season so guys could have their own hotel room on the road in the Marriott or whatever. Just don't worry. Anyway.
Well, as far as Evander Kane, I mean, if there is bad blood there, he's a good young player, and I'm sure that there's tons of GMs that'll be calling up to inquire if they want to trade him.
I'd take him in a minute. Here's a team that there's one guy I'm going to be watching during training camp, and I'm kind of interested to see if Tampa Bay bounces back. They're the next team in line here. Corey Konecker is that player. I've seen him a ton in the AHL this year. I really like him. I like the motor, and I love that nobody can throw him off his game. He's a skill player, and I'm kind of interested to see if he ends up on that roster, and I'm also interested to see if Tampa Bay can bounce back. You know, they made a few moves in the offseason after being so close to going to the Stanley Cup Finals 2 years ago and then having just an awful year, especially in net last season, but it seems to me that they could bounce back.
Yeah, and again, ironically, we keep going in the reverse order of the standings here. We got Tampa Bay at 90 points and at 53 over the shortened season. Corey Konecker, I mean, he's certainly a guy who's lit up the AHL. You do know that he's 5'8", though, right, Matt?
I do know that.
His name isn't Martin St. Louis, so I think he could be. A somewhat useful player on the NHL level. I don't know how well that fully translates. Tampa was a team that everybody was way too high on 2 years ago. I mean, they're a game away from going to the Stanley Cup, and that was kind of sort of done with mirrors and on the back of like an ancient goaltender. So a team that's kind of a fringe or a bubble playoff team, I mean, that seems to be where I think they probably should be at.
Yeah, and I'm interested to see, because Anders Lindbach is now their goaltender, and I'm interested to see if he can be a starting goalie, because, you know, how many times have we seen it, and Mike Smith's a good example of this, you know, where a guy is a backup, and maybe he's even a backup for a number of years, and you really don't know about him, and then all of a sudden he gets a chance to play every single night, and he takes off. And you know what? We've seen it the opposite way, too, where a guy's a backup who everyone thinks can be a starter, and then falls on his face when he actually gets a chance.
And Nashville is another place where people, it's a goalie factory, mm-hmm. and so you know, there's some thought that Nashville will make their goaltenders look a little bit better than they are. So I mean, Yzerman was right to identify that obviously as a main weakness, and I think it's a good stab at. Fixing the situation. We just got to see how it works out.
Plus, Lindbach is like 9 feet tall. That always helps too.
He is, he's like 6'6" and he's built like a string bean. I mean, most people are kind of, but I mean, he really is.
Yeah. Washington. They lose Alexander Semin and they lose Thomas Vokoun, but he wasn't playing that much anyway. Braden Holtby played really, really well in the playoffs, and Washington, I think, went farther than people expected them to in the playoffs, but what do you got them doing this year?
We've got them tied with Tampa with 53 points over the shortened season. I mean, so they're a team that we had, got to admit it, that we had them ranked number one by Vokoda last year, and that was a big miss. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you would say that that's a team that significantly underachieved over the regular season, but some of that was probably some percentages just coming back into line. So, I mean, there's some big questions there. I mean, obviously, you find out how much Semin meant to the team. You find out how much Ovechkin has left in the tank. I mean, you know, not only has his, points dropped off, GVT dropped off, but I mean, Ovechkin's big stat was his shots. I mean, he always led the league in shots, sometimes by just bushels, and that's come down to human kind of levels. So, I mean, is he quite the superstar he used to be? And then, you know, heck, they signed Mike Green to a multi-year deal, and you wrote about Washington in the book, so, I mean, you can talk about it more here, but, I mean, you know, what is Mike Green? I mean, is he anything more than a shadow of himself anymore? I mean, there's a lot of question marks on this team.
Mike Green is one of the biggest ones. Well, I will say this for Alex Ovechkin before I talk a little bit more about Green. Ovechkin got under the skin of Dale Hunter for one reason or another, and whoever knows what. And, you know, he wasn't using him at the end of games. He was taking him off the ice in the third period if they were winning. I mean, it was downright bizarre what was going on with Ovechkin and Hunter last season, and even Boudreau before that. So I don't know. Right. I don't know what the deal.
He'd already dropped off a lot the year before that.
Yeah.
And Ovechkin's points the last 3 years: 109, 85, 65. That's a drop.
That's a huge drop. And, you know, his power play production has a lot to do with that. And also the sheer number of power plays in the NHL, which I think could bounce back a little bit now coming out of the lockout. I think that, once again, they're going to want scoring to be up coming out of the lockout. So I think you'll see a few more penalties called. I don't think this is a great team. I don't think they particularly use their players in the right way. You know, I think you saw it with Joel Ward getting very little ice time when he was a guy, like, especially even before Hunter, but then when Hunter came in, and, you know, he was a player that could be a two-way player that's, you know, strong on the puck and stuff, and he was relegated to just being, you know, like one of your defensive, like a Manny Malhotra almost for that team, being used so little and just in certain situations. And, you know, the Ovechkin thing, can you get a lot out of him? And Mike Green, I mean, I just think, I don't understand it at all. I mean, Mike Green to me is, I mean, do I want to compare him to, you know, the post-first lockout, like, you know, Thomas Cabrelle or something? I almost want to. I mean, he's not a dominant player. He never really was a dominant overall player. He was a good power play guy and decent offensively at 5-on-5. And now, though, I mean, he's washed up. I mean,
you mentioned Caberle, and I get the point as a concept. I mean, Green's been hurt, but look at his production over the last three seasons. I mean, obviously he's been injured, so it's been less games. 3 years ago, 76 points in 75 games. This is a defenseman scoring a point a game. Mm-hmm. 2 seasons ago, 24 points in 49 games, dropping to a point every other game. Last year, 7 points in 32 games. That's less than a point every 4 games. This looks like a geometric progression here. So, I mean, this is not good.
And the fact is that when Mike Green isn't scoring, you might as well have someone from the AHL play on the defensive side of the ice.
And they signed him for 3 years at $6 million a year. Now.
Oh, that's just wacky. And you know what? Dennis Wiedemann's not a great player. Like, I mean, I don't think he's a superstar player by any means. But
I mean, they lost him to Calgary there, and I mean, he was kind of brought in to fill in for Green, but now he's even gone as an alternative.
Yeah, and you know what? Like, I mean, I don't think he's like any sort of star, but I think he's a good player and a solid defenseman all around, or at least as a number four guy or five. He's a great five. I don't know why Calgary gave him all that money. Maybe that's why they lose all the time. But I mean,
lack of options. But I mean, it still kind of doesn't excuse throwing that kind of contract.
No, that, not at all. I mean, they do have. You know, I won't be so far down because I do think Braden Holtby's a good goaltender, and I'm interested to see what they do with him, and I'm interested to see what Mike Ribeiro does coming in. I know that he's a little bit on the other side himself, and I'm really, really high on John Carlson. I like John Carlson so much, and I think that he's going to become one of the best defensemen in the league. So I'm not counting this team out. I'm just not really. I don't think that they're where they were, and certainly there's no reason to put them at the top of the Eastern Conference.
And we didn't even mention Nicholas Backstrom, and he's had a series of injuries himself. So I mean, that's even if he continues to be a good player, I mean the injuries have been nagging him.
And finally, Timo, we will wrap this podcast up with the Florida Panthers, who made the playoffs last year. And lost to the New Jersey Devils. The Panthers may be one of the luckiest teams, I don't know, ever.
Thank goodness Dale Talon didn't win GM of the Year, by the way.
18 points, Demo. 18 points they earned by losing in overtime or shootout. 18. They only won 38 games, and they won a division.
Those were old-fashioned ties, though.
Yeah, old-fashioned ties. I mean, just think of it this way. The other teams in the East won 51, 49, and even if you go to the West, 49, 51, and then 42. But they won only 38 games in regulation and made the playoffs. And this year, I think it's right that we see them drop off the face of the earth.
Right. Vokoda has them as the second worst team in the league, 84 points over a full season or 49 points over the shortened season. I mean, obviously, the shortened season means, you know, a few good bounces again, and they could end up in the playoffs. I mean, after all, they're only playing against the Southeast Division, so they've got more games against weaker opponents there. You never know. I mean, Florida has supposedly the number one farm system, so, I mean, that's a team that, you know, could be better in a couple of years, but you know, so many of the moves that they made last off season to get up to the cap floor were just completely puzzling. You know, signing Ed Jovanovski, you know, to 4 years at that.
Sean Bergenheim.
You know, some of the moves, you know, have been good and bad. I mean, obviously they took on the contract of Brian Campbell, and he turned in some very good play for them. but they took on a huge contract for that. So, you know, that's a team that, you know, again, they may have made the playoffs as a third seed, you know, with the way the playoffs are set up. Obviously, they didn't have the third best record in the Eastern Conference, but they're a team that we're certainly projecting to be out of the playoffs as the second worst team in the NHL and the worst team in the Eastern Conference.
I just totally agree with that projection. I mean, not only the luck last year, but you also lose Jason Garrison, who was a huge part of their defense, right, and really a huge part of their production. And I'm looking, you know, over their defense, and you got, well, you bring in Philip Kuba, like, really at age 36 to go along with washed up Joe Vanowski, and, you know, Brian Campbell, and I don't know, who's your top four? Keaton Ellerbe? I mean, he's not really a top four defenseman in the NHL, and, you know,
Branson's got a ways to go. I mean, he looked kind of lost even as a third pairing guy last year.
The only thing that I like about this team is a guy that I've seen a lot of, and no, it's not George Parros. The only guy that I really like on this team, and I hope that he makes the roster out of the camp, and they put him right in number one goaltender, is Jacob Markstrom. Saw him in Rochester when they were with Florida, and I actually had a chance to talk with him earlier this year and write about him. I think that Jacob Markstrom could be in your elite goaltending class over the next couple of years. He's got the size, speed, and you know what amazed me about Jacob Markstrom is how fast he went from a very raw prospect coming to a very tough league in the AHL and then seemed like he was just on a different level so quickly. Like, it was ahead of him, as it is most players when they first get there, and then all of a sudden, you know, he flipped the switch and took huge steps forward. And I know that we talk with Corey Pronman a lot about goaltenders and how difficult it is to project them, but I really like him, and I think that, and I loved his attitude too when I talked with him, and so I like him about this team. Everything else, I think, man, there is just no chance they're good.
There you go.
So there you go. Timo, it's an overused word, but I think this podcast qualifies as epic.
I hope it's epic in a good way.
I think so too.
So definitely, let's come back together in a couple days and preview the Western Conference, and then people will be all ready for the NHL season just as long as they've listened to our podcast.
Ah, right. Last word on this, Timo, for me is I'm so glad that you were right. I'm so glad they worked it out, because I missed all of this. I missed talking about players, analyzing them, just looking at. I know this makes us the geeks, but this is what we're supposed to be. Like, looking at guys' possession numbers and where they were and quality of competition and all this stuff, I like doing all this stuff. And it's one thing that for 4 months, there was no reason to do it whatsoever other than just finishing up the book. And, you know, it kind of got depressing a little bit. So I'm really pumped for this to get going.
Can't wait, definitely. I mean, if they'll let me in the building, I'll be there on opening night to watch the Devils at the Islanders, and we'll take it from there.
Awesome. All right, Timo, thanks a lot, and we also appreciate Tom Awad spending so much of his time with us. I mentioned it a few times through the podcast, but we love Tom. He's our guy. So, Timo, thank you very much. We'll talk again in a couple of days, and thank you so much. If you got to this point, congratulations. I mean, this certainly was longer than usual, so we appreciate it. We appreciate you listening, and buy our book. Go to hockeyperspectives.com and buy it. And for Timo Seppä, Tom Awad, I'm Matthew Collar. Thanks so much for listening to Hockey Perspectives Radio.